The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
Good night and welcome to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright, family medicine consultant and specialist. I just want to thank you for coming out tonight on this Tuesday on Guardian Radio 96.9. We are live on Guardian Radio, guardiantalkradio.com, as well as my Facebook page, the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer. You can find us, you can follow us, and you can catch shows that you may have missed. So check us out live or catch the recordings. And sometimes I download the recordings from off of here as well. And I realize I'm probably not recording. Yeah, all right, great. So welcome to the show. Another exciting evening, all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. I'm going to talk about a couple of things tonight, and I'm going to keep the lines open if you want to join in, or if you have something in particular that you might be interested in talking about. We're going to definitely entertain that because there's a lot of different things on my mind. We're supposed to talk, get a little away from COVID, but there's so much stuff happens that we're going to talk a few things about that. But our lines tonight are 323-6232. 325-4316, 325-4259. Of course, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical needs, all ages. We take care of them. We're located in the Bahamas Heart Center, and we are a family medicine clinic. And so feel free to reach out to us. We can be found on Facebook at Medical Concierge Services, as well as Instagram, medical_concierge_services. I know it's pretty long. And then of course, our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. And you can call us 326-1521. And of course, we do have a WhatsApp, especially if you wanna sign up for NHI, we make it really, really easy for you. Give us a WhatsApp, say, I wanna sign up for NHI, and you can reach us at 429-4880. So a lot of things happening in the world. I just want to touch quickly. I don't want to spend too long, but I just wanted to, yes, get this out there about like what's happening in the country in terms of the violence. I try not to really follow these things as much as possible because it's very, very distressing. But this continual violent streaks over the weekend is a serious sign and symptom of really distressful things that are happening in this country. And I'm really scared about how we are dealing with this at this point in time, and why are we kind of spiraling out of control? And I know that violence has been an issue in our country for quite some time. It's shocking because the Bahamas, especially as I grew up, was a very peaceful place as far as I knew. It was kind of oohs and ahs when you heard about murders and these types of things. But I would say over the last maybe 15 years or so, we have really been spiraling out of control in terms of violence and really bad crimes. It's a big, big symptom of the internal problems that are going on in our society, whether it be education or other things. So I really started looking at what causes violent crime in communities. And there's lots of different things, because I would say that in America, they're also seeing a similar kind of thing where there's this rise in crime. But I think for them, it's very, very different. So a lot of the analysis I saw was based on some of the stuff happening in America. But if you go to a lot of other countries, some of the European countries and some other places around the world, you don't see this really large propensity for crime. And really, you know, it comes down to the dynamics of life. I saw a really interesting article one time that talked about the way people express themselves and how that relates to crime and the way that they, you know, how they react with other people. And sometimes violence is just a lack of expression of how to deal with things. Of course, there are lots of elements, poverty and things that are related. But there was some research done by the World Bank where they looked at what causes violent crime. They looked at theories about, you know, what was causing it in terms of Becker and different like social analysts that looked at both economics and they really looked at the paradigm of this and the cost-benefit analysis related to crime. And, you know, for a very long time, we felt, you know, the stronger the punishment, you know, people would deter them from crime. Most countries like ourselves have moved away from things like capital punishment. And we thought, you know, that may be some relation, but there are other countries that don't have that type of capital punishment and they don't have that type of crime. And so looking deeper and looking at more analysis, it's more than just the cost benefit of it, because lots of times these people don't think about going to jail or any other thing. What really seems to stem this is not just education, but also economics. And not just the economy not doing well, but the large gaps in wealth and disparity across nations. And I think we're seeing a lot of that here. When you have high employment rates, unemployment rates, and you also have lots of disparity in wealth, you tend to see lots of crime. So what's happening to all these young people that aren't finishing school? A lot of them are missing. Are they getting involved in gangs? And why can't we create a system where they feel like they have opportunity? Why are they falling into all of this stuff? And so the effects of poor education, as well as systems and circumstances, all have a part of it. And what they found that people with positive relationships, people who were involved in some type of religious organization, actually do a lot better both in school and in life. So this shows that there are some serious things that are missing inside our community, which is creating this paradigm of crime. And it's something that we have to look at. And recently, in somewhat of a departure from Beckett's paradigm, the research turned to social logical aspects that affect the incidence of crime. DeLillo in 96 links the lack of social capital to the rise of crime rates in the United States. In other words, if you do not feel that you have capital or stake in the place that you live, the country, that city that you dwell in, you're more posed to do things that just are going to be criminal in nature. And so Freeman also found a strong association between church attendance and lower crime participation for needy youths, and demographic factors of social interaction had also been a subject of the research. Looking at disadvantaged youth in Boston, Case and Katz found that individuals' propensity to commit a crime rises when his peers are also engaged in criminal activity. In related papers, Gleiser, Sacadote, and Skentman in 96 emphasized the role of social interactions in explaining the continuous prevalence of high crime rates in certain places and significant variance of crime across a space. The literature review departs the old way of thinking that crime was just related to punishment and whether the punishment was worse than the crime itself. And since we've been moving away from even the punishment aspect, we don't have that, and we have not dealt with the social economic components as well. And so I just want to talk about the conclusion of all of this, because it's a very detailed scientific report, but they make some interesting conclusions that I think that we should think about. And why I kind of go into something with this type of death is because really in this country, if we don't look at how deep crime relates to the country and what's going on, how can we start solving these problems? And we need to start having these kinds of levels of conversations in order to look at these things. It has to be a really, really well rounded approach. And I'm just tired. I mean, I have patients that come in and they're related to people who are murdered and, you know, the effects of that in the people and the children involved. I mean, we are creating an environment where we are going off the deep end. And as a nation, we have to find our core and ethical values and figure out how do we instill those in future generations. And so the research concluded from the results using cross-country analysis. So they looked at all the different countries and cities and states around the United States and provided strong evidence in favor of a model of criminal behavior that emphasizes the role of economic variables and accounts for inertial effects. Both economic growth and income equality are robust determinants of violent crime. So both the economy not growing, which we have a problem with that. We're seeing kind of growth now, but that's because we were closed. And so anytime you open back up, you're gonna see an economic growth, but we had been struggling with growth for quite some time. And then income equality, there is a growing divide between the haves and the have-nots. And so these are now robust or really important determinants of what causes crime in an environment. Furthermore, the article goes on to say that even controlling for country-specific events, such as systemic measurements of error, there's clear evidence that violent crime is self-perpetuating. These variables, and economic growth, inequality, and past crime rates work well for homicides and remarkably well for robbery rates. Their sign and statistical significance survive the addition of other explanatory variables, including measures of crime determinants, illicit drug activities, demographic characteristics, and cultural traits. So these were really the ones that had the largest impact. And so those are things that we really, really need to talk about. And we really need to have those types of conversation of how the economy and this divide of inequality really goes on, because I go to certain places and the most expensive of things is sold out, and I go to other places and people can barely buy food. And so we have seen where the middle class in our country has completely has shrunk quite a bit. And so people either became a lot wealthier or they became a lot poorer. And that in itself creates a problem. So we're almost living in two different countries. And I think we're being governed by the more wealthy, which interestingly leaves the less fortunate in a weird predicament. And so I think education is a great vehicle to kind of stem some of these things. We need to listen to that. I give props to our Minister of Health, because she is looking to look at bringing those children back into the fold that have gone missing. But we've had 2 years of children not getting the education required. A lot of students, when I see them coming in, their GPAs are much lower than they were prior to the pandemic. So a lot of kids have suffered on top of that too. So we've lost even more children along the way, kind of dealing with all of this. And so this is important because murders, suicide, they have to do with life expectancy, quality of life, and a lot of things are all related to the health of the nation. The stress, the grief, the depression that comes out of these things and the deaths in the country, the fear it instills in everyday citizens not knowing exactly how to deal with crime and all those variations, all play a toll on our way of life and our thought processes and our mental health. And so we need to really, really kind of look at this and determine how are we going to reverse some of these things. And this is going to require something really big, some dynamic change, and a true focus on both healthcare, education, and the economy. I think those three things are really the most important things that we really need to be focused on. Everything else, all of these crazy little laws and rules and all of this stuff to deal with immigration and bringing more people in. I mean, please, I think we really need to kind of focus on the people that are here and how do we make their life, you know, really comparable to the GDP size that we have. So we're, you know, we're cash rich in the sense of a nation, but how is each individual? Another that kind of goes with all this is work ethic. Quite a few debates on that online about work ethic and how that relates to our economy, because I don't think that we can grow an economy with a work ethic that's lacking. And so as Bahamians, we also have to start instilling these types of things in our children, for our next generation, our education, and then re-educate those who don't understand these principles and concepts. And that brings me into those of you who do follow and have been following us for quite some time. During the pandemic, our civil efforts, so my civil efforts, moved from the educational realm, and we did a lot of, we were feeding people and we were giving out boxes of food to assist very early in the pandemic when people were afraid to go out and help people. And that we were able to go out there and assist people when they needed it. And so we did that, and that was a part of the Alliance charity that I helped to found. And we are kind of rehashing the concept of the Alliance charity. It took us over a year to get our license in order to be a proper NPO in with all the regulations. It took quite a while, but we got it sorted out. But things have kind of changed since then. And now we have gotten it into an LLC. So it's going to be properly structured in order to help. So upcoming, we'll give you more information. If you like to be a part of our educational community service initiatives, you can go to the Alliance on Facebook. We have that. We're going to be posting how to get involved, how to donate, how to support, and get back on track with some of our educational programs that we begin with. The concept of the Alliance as a charity organization actually started when I was doing a series of lectures. Initially, we were looking at some historical lectures, educating Bahamians about their history and their culture. And, you know, people wanted to be involved, and we kind of gathered to do that. But then the pandemic hit, and we took our resources and put them towards feeding the community. And so getting back to our roots of education, because I think it's very important to educate young people and people in the community of really where we come from, the importance of different things. And we were looking at different aspects of the human history and really kind of bringing them out to play and how they relate to our lives. Because if you read history, you'll see that in a cycle of things. If you read Sir Randall Fox's letters, you'll see that we have been in this place before, and you can see that his time period, things were not quite so distant from some of the issues that we're having today. Slightly different context, but not a lot has really, really changed. And so it's interesting when you look at those things, you can see the cycle of life and history and what human beings deal with as we try to get through this life together in the most sane way possible. It's important to learn from your history, and it helps you not to make the kind of mistakes that you would have made previously. And so we're going to be looking at doing those series, and I'll be providing some information in the future of how you can support the Alliance charity in our efforts to educate and work with other nonprofit organizations to kind of, you know, just make the Bahamas a better place. And that's really what we want to do. We want to lift up as many people as possible. So it's really been my goal to get that back up and running and to a level where we can serve the community and the nation at large in a larger capacity. And so I'll have more information about that in the future. All right, so I really wanted to take a moment to just kind of talk about what's going on in the country and how I think it's affecting us. And if we're going to move forward, how do we get out of those things? So we need everybody at the table to make those different connections. And we have to create the kind of opportunities where our young people see that they can be involved. So our number is 323-6232-326-325-4259. Now I want to shift a little bit because this is something that's always kind of going to be important until we're out of this completely. And in the Bahamas, we seem to want to keep going and going and going in terms of this pandemic response. But very interestingly, two very important things happened this week related to COVID. And the first one was that the CDC Director Walensky talked about reorganizing the agency after admitting COVID pandemic responses fell short. So she's been admitting a lot of things along the way, you know, admissions, censorship, lots of different things related to the pandemic response. And so finally, she's at the point where she says the whole entire organization needs to be reorganized. Now, her reasoning for the reorganization and what pink are the downfalls of the CDC, I think are quite different, but then the same conclusion that there is a problem within that organization. This is the organization that most of the world was listening to and looked for how to develop their policies. And what they did is there was a lot of misguided information, a lot of back and forth we all saw with masking, non-masking. And they really created a narrative in order to tell the story the way they wanted to. And that's not the way that science or a regulatory or guidance body should act. And so they're really in a lot of trouble right now as people go back and look at the response to the pandemic. And yes, good night, Ms. Colby. Thank you for those of you watching us online. Thank you for joining. So they're really having problems with that. And so this article actually from CNBC looks at her response to all of this and how she is going about. And it starts by saying the key points, which is that Dr. Rochelle Walensky acknowledged the agency's response to COVID pandemic fell short. Walensky also launched a reorganization to the act more swiftly in the face of public health threats. The organization changes are focused on sharing data more quickly and making public health guidance easier for people to understand. And so those are the kinds of things that she really wanted to make some changes about, because everyone is looking now at her and the confusion that there was between CDC, the FDA, the NHI, and all of that stuff. And as we talked about last week, there was a lot of changes that were made in terms of policies and the way that they are going about looking at COVID, releasing a lot of the issues they had and making the vaccinated pretty much equivalent to the unvaccinated is something that we've been seeing in the science for quite some while. And ACE's natural immunity has shown to be a lot stronger, and we were not seeing it in the policies of organizations such as the CDC. They've been actually quite behind, similar to our own policies in this country, more than 6 months to a year behind the science that's happening. And that is a critical thing when you're really in the middle of what we're calling a pandemic. You need to be on top of the ball. You need to be looking at preprint articles, and you need to be looking at an expansive amount of information in order to make the right decisions. What we found is that they really fell short on that. And similarly, countries like ourselves that kind of just did copy and paste policies and pulled pieces from here and there without doing their own work, really fell in line with a lot of the stuff, which happened to be lots of nonsense. So the CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, is reorganizing the agency and saying it didn't react quickly enough during the COVID pandemic. And according to internal review of the agency's operate, she laid out several organizational changes for the Center of Disease Control Prevention will take over the coming months to correct missteps, failures that occurred during the last 2.5 years of the pandemic, according to a fact sheet. And this is something that we don't do. So even though this is coming extremely late, we see that other countries and organizations, when they do realize that they've made a mistake or things didn't go the way that they quite planned, there is quite a bit of a shakeup. People are moved around and they kind of try to do some form of assessment of where things went wrong. And we tend not to see that here. We see, you know, the same people just kind of having the same opportunities over and over again. So for the past 75 years, the CDC public health have been preparing for COVID-19. That's a strange thing to say. I think she means in general that they've been preparing for any type of pandemic-like response. But to say that for 75 years, the CDC has been preparing for COVID-19 is a really, really strange for her to say. And in our big moment, our performance did not reliably meet expectations, Walensky said in a statement. My goal is new public health action oriented culture at the CDC that emphasizes accountability, collaboration, communication, and timelines, something we didn't really see during the pandemic, especially accountability and collaboration. There was really a lot of things that were censored. It was not a collaboration between different thinking groups. And in terms of accountability, we know that a lot of these organizations did not do the type of analysis and checks and balances that they were supposed to. In terms of communication, we got a very agenda-driven communication approach. And in terms of timelines, it seemed very and extremely vague. We didn't have to fight ourselves out of this whole situation by saying that we were tired and we had enough. If not, it seemed like it would have gone on and on and on and on. The central objectives of the reorganization are focused on sharing scientific data faster and making it easier for public to understand health guidance according to the brief document. As we said, these organizations like the CDC have lost a lot of respect. And so a lot of this is coming on hindsight that people have just simply stopped listening to them and they've had enough. Walensky launched the review in April after the massive winter surge of infection from Omicron variant upended the nation's public health response. And so we had a time period where they were telling people if you got vaccinated, you wouldn't get COVID. We all remember that. And here comes Omicron, everyone got COVID. And this really is what kind of shook things up because the narrative definitely. The CDC repeatedly faced criticism during the pandemic, confusing public health recommendations. We remembered mask on, mask off, two masks, three masks, and releasing data too slowly through retrospective reports that were outpaced by the rapid spread of the virus. Like I said before, they were really behind the data and information that was truly out there. So those who were paying attention, like myself and many other doctors, we really were waiting for them to catch up with what we were seeing, not just in real time, but what we were seeing in studies around the world. Public health experts were often frustrated by their briefings on the pandemic, relied on data from other countries such as the United Kingdom and Israel, and that's where I got a lot of my data. There was a lot of information coming out, and those of you who haven't had a chance to look at the data that came out of Israel, these are all Pfizer studies. And they were looking at what was happening in real time as people needed. And also we saw what was happening in countries that were not being vaccinated. And so we really were able to see ahead of time because these countries were moving at a faster pace than I would say this side of the world. And we also got to see what was happening in the United Kingdom and how they were dealing with policy, the fallouts they had. And they were one of the first countries to kind of drop most of their regulations. After a really, really stringent policies, both of these countries, the information that came out just became so overwhelming that they just had to make different choices. Dr. Walensky is appointing an executive to lead a team which will implement the changes, and the CDC will also create new executive council that reports directly to her to determine the agency's key priorities backed up by budget decisions. The agency's science and laboratory sciences division, which play crucial roles in investigating threats such as COVID, will also report to the CDC. And so they're shaking up their structure. They're looking at all the things that they did incorrectly. And it's really healthy to do that form of analysis when you've been through something like this. What did you do right? What did you do wrong? And correct some of those things. And so even though I really don't like the way that the CDC handled itself, there is some self-reflection here. The CDC is also creating an equity office to make sure agency's workforce reflects the US population. Of course, you know, there has to be some wokeism in there and better communicates public health guidance across all groups. So that was really interesting thing that happened with the CDC, a complete shakeup. And we're now going to go into something that's even a little bit more interesting because we're going to the man that led most of the discussions on COVID, especially early on, and where a lot of people and a lot of doctors looked to him at the time as guidance on what to do. And strangely enough, him and Walensky usually gave very differing advice at times, and he also made things extremely confusing. And he has a very dark past when it comes to these types of things with his with what happened with HIV. And so for all of you who know this guy, you know, Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, MD, he made a statement recently about what he is about to do. And so this is another really interesting medical thing that happened because he's been leading this whole conversation on COVID. He's deemed himself basically Mr. Science. And, you know, he was just making a lot of random policy and advice and guidance. He's just throwing it out there. August 22nd, 2022, through the NIH, which is the National Institute of Health, under the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, which is the department that's headed by Dr. Fauci, he made a global statement to the world. And what he said, I'm going to read that, we can discuss that, is he said that today he would be stepping down from the position of director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the NIAID, and chief of the NIAID Laboratory of Immunoregulation, as well as the position of chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden. So he really had like three jobs, director, chief, and he was the chief medical advisor to Biden. He is the most highly paid man in the government, and he will be leaving all of those positions in December of this year to pursue the next chapter of his career. This is strange because I think we retire in 2 years, and so this is an unexpected announcement and shows you that there have been some changes in the medical framework and structure of who's gonna be in charge and who is gonna be leading these things in the future. So I expect to see some really big changes upcoming in the future, especially if they're going to fall in line with the new guidance that's coming out from the CDC itself. So he goes on to say it's been an honor of a lifetime to have led the NIAID, an extraordinary institution for so many years through so many scientific and public health challenges. I'm very proud of my accomplishments. I have worked with and learned from countless talented and dedicated people in my own laboratory, the NIAID and the NIH and beyond. And to them, I express my abiding respect and gratitude. So he talks about over the last 38 years, what he did as director. So 38 years of being director of that organization. And he also talked about the enormous privilege it was to serve under 7 presidents of the United States, beginning with President Ronald Reagan. I don't even think I was alive. Maybe I have to think back. Maybe I was a little kid. On newly emerging and re-emerging infection threats, including HIV and AIDS, West Nile virus, anthrax, pandemic influenza, various bird flus, Ebola, Zika, a lot of different things. So the guy has been around for a very, very long time to serve as the chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden since the very first day of his administration. He talks about whilst he's moving on from his current position, he's not retiring. So although he's been more than 50 years in government service, he plans to pursue another phase in his career while he still has energy and passion. And I do believe Dr. Fauci is about 80, 81 years old. He's pretty old guy. I think, you know, late 70s. He's pretty up there. I don't know. I would want to retire. So we have a comment from online. He said, I hope he's going to a private special interest group and work on forcing their government to make any crazy decisions in the future. I hope he's going to a private special interest group. I don't know. I don't know where he's going. Maybe he has a cushy job and pharmaceuticals lined up for him. I have no idea. But you say you hope he's not going to a private special interest group to work on forcing the government to make in future. Who knows? And it's probably very likely This is a guy that's been in power for a very long time, over 50 years running a very important organization that kind of sat in the background, doing a lot of things that we were unaware of. And I'm sure it's very hard to step away from that type of power. And for him to leave early means that he's either being forced out or that he has a cushy job that's kind of waiting for him where he's probably going to be either lobbying or doing some other things that we don't really want to hear about. Okay, so he talks about learning what he's learned as the NIAID director to continue to advance science and public health and to inspire and mentor the next generation of scientific leaders as they help to prepare the world to face future infectious disease threats. Boy, I don't know if history is going to be kind to this guy, because we also have everything that he did during the HIV AIDS pandemic, which was very scary as a history. And one has to think, how did he survive so long in these organizations with these types of mistakes? I listened to the early recordings of Dr. Fauci, and he was pretty much on top of his game. He was on the ball with his information. He talked about how, you know, if you got a respiratory virus like the flu, that you, there's no herd immunity and that you can get it again. He was very frank. It's very strange to see the shift when it came to actually dealing with these pandemics and these issues like HIV and now COVID-19. He goes on to say that over the coming months, he will commit into his current responsibilities as well as help prepare the Institute for Leadership Transition. NHI is served by some of the most talented scientists in the world, and I have no doubt that I'm leaving this work in very capable hands. Thanks to the power of science and investments in research innovation, the world has been able to fight deadly diseases and help save lives around the globe. I'm proud to have been a part of this important work and look forward to helping to continue to do so in the future. So yes, Dr. Fauci is stepping down. He is removing himself from public work in regards to this. And we're seeing really big changes happening inside the CDC, amongst other places. We now look to our own country, where we expect the same type of analysis and shakeup to what's happening. But there seems to be a deaf ear on the reality of what's happening around the world, the realizations that we've had that we have. So we cannot speak of science and then only accept the science that speaks to our narrative. We must be very open to this, and you can be analytical towards it, but we know a lot more than we did before, and it seems that this whole concept of listening to the science has gone away. So if you want to join into the conversation, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We'll go to a quick break, and we will be right back on The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the play, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
The Access Accelerator Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easier to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com, or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
So, what would you like to discuss?
Insurance talk. It's so frustrating. I go to the mall for a motor, drive to Bay Street to get a home quote, swing east to file a medical claim, then go west for a pensions appointment. Don't even get me started about life. I'm going to prescribe CG Atlantic. They have all the insurance you're looking for. Really? Thanks!
With all the insurance you need, we're like a doctor that doesn't need. CG Atlantic. Good like that.
This is Guardian Radio. Mondays at 9 a.m. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Denotha Archer Cartwright. Thank you for staying with us tonight on Guardian Radio. We're on GuardianTalkRadio.com. Producer, we have a little bit of feedback, so if you can just see what that's all about. Brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical health needs. We both have a clinic on Collins Avenue. You can give us a call, 321. And also, you can find us on Facebook, Medical Concierge Services. I have a bit of feedback, so if you could just get to that. All right, great. So you can reach out if you have a comment or if you want to get involved tonight. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So we talked about various different things. We talked a little bit about the violence that's happening in the country, Dr. Walensky making changes in CDC, and also Dr. Fauci that is stepping down in December. We have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good night, Dr. D.
Hi, good night.
Yeah, great show, of course. You beat me on that one. I didn't hear the latest statement from Dr. Walensky, right? Very beautiful lady, but very deceptive and very cunning with her knowledge to the bookless sheep, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know I'm a top of the game, so I'm in the meadows, questions asked, and so I really would have some questions for Dr. McCullough, because in listening to your show, I had to dash out and make a little run, right? So I was trying to hurry up, get back, and so I'm on the phone. So I have to turn around and deal with some very, very crucial things that I've been mentioning throughout this scamdemic. Firstly, this conversation is about a crime against humanity, all right? Yeah, it's a crime. It's a crime against humanity. It's subterfuge, et cetera. Now, I heard you was, you know, I have the video, too, with Dr. Fauci back in 2010 or thereabouts about saying that if you catch the flu, you don't need to be vaccinated, and you have natural immunity is better than the vaccine. He's on video saying that, right? But we know that now. It has been proven. So they knew these things a while back. And so when it comes to certain things, I'd just like to educate the public and also educate myself by conversating with you. Also, now remember now, herd immunity, like I keep saying, hidden within herd immunity is cross immunity. So I sometimes talk too much, but especially when talking with you. Why is it that nobody's mentioning cross immunity when Anku was on the radio and Dr. John Campbell has a peer review study showing cross immunity amongst the influenza, corona type viruses, potato viruses? Why is it that nobody's talking about cross immunity? Cross immunity has already been established. Why is it that you're hearing about it?
Yeah. I don't think they were talking about anything that didn't just point you in a particular direction. So,
no, but I mean, cross immunity exists amongst influenza strain.
Yeah,
this is an experiment.
But all of these concepts, 52, all the old concepts.
That's what I'm saying, Dr. D. But why is it that they're fooling the sheep?
It's very strange, and this is what got me on a different track of thinking. It's very strange.
And I appreciate you very much.
I am a person that believes in the structure of things. And so you can't make me go to school for 12 years to learn particular things, and then you don't follow any of those things. You just, all of a sudden, everything seems brand new. And we know that these are basic building blocks of science, immunology, that we all have to learn in medical school. If you weren't paying attention, I'm sorry. But,
Dr. D,
it might not have been the most interesting topics. But every doctor, most scientists that have done biology, science at some higher level.
But in a sense, I'm glad
I knows that all of these topics are well known and well covered and studied.
All right, but my interest before I dropped out of COB was really botany, and I studied studying plants, and I love plants. But I realized the first viruses were discovered in plants, right? But here it is now. Peter McCullough is here, but I'm upset with the level of deception, because you have, I mentioned, and unwittingly, I was correct. And most of the times, I'm correct. And I'm not being, you know, all right, you've been humanized mice, right? Humanized mice. I'm reading the book Viral, written by a doctor, Lana Chan. And I'm loving the book. I made a negative comment towards it, but I'm loving the book because she's chronicalizing the events. And when you I haven't finished read it, but when you read the book, you will walk away with the opinion all of the efforts that the CCP made to deny the BBC team access to the Bat Cave, to the caves where the bats were. They didn't mention the Bat Lady Xing Li. She didn't mention the deaths of the initial respiratory virus infection in the caves with the guys who were sent in to move the excrement or use I think they sell it. They call it a funny name in China. I can't remember, but they sell it. And they became infected, and initially, I think maybe three out of or four out of six died, but they didn't even mention that. And so when I look at the study with the humanized mice and the concealment of China to allow anyone access to the bad caves and try to conceal the planting trees, et cetera, and all that. So with humanized mice, like I said, when you humanize the mice, you give the mice the human genome, which is complete DNA. They try to make the mice as human as possible in order to get the results, right? But unwittingly, this is why I want, maybe you could answer this, you know. But when you humanize the mice, you give it the complete human genome, and then you use the experiment. So then you already introduce the virus to the human genome before you start the vaccinating humans. Hence, you're giving the virus chance to evolve or have a mechanism, escape mechanisms, et cetera, against the immune system. And so this is one of the negative effects of using humanized mice. And this is why I said initially almost a year ago that by humanizing the mice, you're actually humanizing the mice to suit your studies. Which in the book, she's saying that by the time they had discovered the virus, it is already evolved and it was ready to meet it with the human immune system. But there's a lot of concepts in there that I just don't want to jump. Well, history of subterfuge and misinformation, disinformation, which I think is intentional, right? It's not just nobody is interested in the lab leak hypothesis, even though it points, like I said, the CC. GG genome dash CCGG points towards manipulation, right? And it's just a whole host. I'm so glad I bought the book.
It's all kind of falling apart right now because there's so much information. No matter how much they try to censor it, people are getting to it because people want to know. People are using their eyes and they're using their experiences to realize that there's more to this than meets the eye, and they just can't, and that's why it's all kind of falling
away. Yeah, but Dr. D, there was an important revelation over the past 2 weeks or a week. We know that Dr. Fauci is resigning, but his repercussions are still here. But I don't know if you saw the article on I Watch Trial Site, which is a scientific, it's a situation going on in the Illinois hospital where there's a lawsuit against the I can't remember the name of the entity, but the employers, the nurses and doctors are suing for the forced vaccine mandate. I don't know if you saw that. I don't know if they won. You saw that?
So I think so far they've had one group that's got about $10 million. I think they had 500 members. It was a mixture of nurses and doctors who had been pretty much, they got rid of them or forced them to take the vaccine. Some of them had submitted exemptions and they actually had to go back and rehire them, give them some money, different stuff like that. And
yeah, but Dr. D.
Those are the type of things that are coming out a lot, as well as there are lawsuits against people they're not accepting people's religious exemptions, which is unconstitutional in many cases. So you're finding that those cases are going through the courts as well. They've had some wins in terms of the military. In terms of there was an interesting article where they were telling the military they had to take it because they had the Comirnaty, which is the one that's supposed to be authorized, properly authorized, authorized.
Finding out
that those vials were not even the correct vials, that they were changing lot numbers.
My good friend, you caused me to remember something and all from the release, Pfizer clinical trials data that they didn't want you to read until 75 years later. What I remembered was that the lot numbers, they found out that there was inconsistencies in the adjuvants in these lot numbers. Hence, different adverse reactions or whatever. But there was no consistency in lot numbers, adjuvants as far as micrograms of particular chemicals. I could some of the adjuvants that didn't. So this vessel, And so when it comes, I want to jump back onto it.
Sadly, most of the people pushing this thing don't even know what's in it.
Yeah, but the thing is, what I'm saying is with the humanized mice, right? I'm very concerned that this is the crux of the conversation. Now, I want you to correct me because I read this years ago. And I remember, you know, reading about vaccinations and how they incubate viruses in eggs and different species to get a different reaction for when they put it in another species, right? Right, Dr. D? So why is it that you're using...
different ways of growing the vaccines.
Yeah, but why is it that you're using humanized mice with a completely... almost a like genome as the humans, and then you're making it look like you would get the same reaction in a human when the virus is already familiarizing
itself. This is it, right? There are some weird scientists out there and who have been dabbling in a lot of different things.
But what they started to say is they
need to use animals sometimes that are closer to humans. So, you know, way back they used to use chimpanzees, and then people started saying, you know, this is cruelty and whatever like that, but nobody really says anything when you use a mouse. So what they would do is they would grow human cells on a mice and then use that for their experiments so that they were technically not testing on humans and technically not testing on higher brain function animals. But as you mentioned, 52, this also comes with consequences because don't just go there. They actually learn.
Science have done a lot of incorrect.
And so this is why Dr. Fauci, through his organization, was sponsoring research
gain of function,
which may have led to changes in viruses such as the coronaviruses.
That's what I'm saying. The virus is strong and bothered now.
Be able to hop into human beings. And so all of this preempted research have led to some of the infections that we are seeing emerging. And this is a very dangerous and serious thing. And this is why in the US they originally had stopped all kinds of gain of function research because they were actually creating problems that they said they were trying to treat.
So,
but you had people like him who were using loopholes and different avenues and going out of the country in places
so
like
detailed,
China
Dr.
to still
D,
do
so
these
detailed.
Experiments. So you got 30 seconds more.
I wanted to mention something very, very important. Yeah, as far as these gain of function research and these experiments, right? What was bothering me was that just on Guardian Radio, they talked about using the live oral polio vaccine that led to disease enhancement of actually manifesting poliomyelitis itself. We saw the experiment with the African, and we saw the experiment with mixing the buffalo with the cow to get a better milk production, but then you had to feed the cow more, and it was more... It's all kind of different loopholes that... mistakes that science makes that they don't put to the forefront of people and make the public knowledgeable about their limitations, and they're duping us. I have a joke before I go, Dr. D.
Okay.
Be a rooster and take your booster. How much boosters can we take? Give thanks.
Oh, boy. 52, always very spirited. Always, you come with a lot of information and facts. So I thank you for that conversation about all of that. It's interesting things that most people don't think about. And I think this is for the first time ever, regular everyday behemoths who are not scientists were kind of thrown into this realm of having to try to understand all of this information and how it relates to them, because we were all, you know, everyone was in a panic and you had to kind of get in there. And what we found is that some of the people that provided us with the information, you know, were not as trustworthy as we thought. And so we all made decisions that worked best for us in that time period with what we understood and what we knew. What I fight for is truth and true science. Remove the censorship and let people make decisions for themselves. The importance and one of the oaths that we take as a doctor is to do no harm. And so we always try to take the route that is going to most benefit our patients and the people that are around us. And this is an important aspect of being a doctor that I take very, do have people's lives in your hands. And so the least that we can do is to do no harm. And we try to do that as best as we can. I think we kind of, you know, in the sense of the total picture, science may have gone a little off course. But I think with most things in life, it's going to correct itself and we are going to find our way, because as human beings, we are extremely resilient and God has given us so much knowledge. So there are wonderful things about science, but like all things, it has to have checks and balances. And that's why you need to have open dialogue and allow people to express their opinions, their professional analysis, and that makes for a better conversation, because at the end of the day, we want to do no harm. And so I want to thank you all for listening tonight, for joining me tonight on Guardian Radio. The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. D. Another interesting show. I'll see you next week. Have a good night.